Welcome to the Other 6 Days podcast, where we check in to see what the good people of Elevation find themselves doing between Sundays. This is Brandon.
And this is Graham. So, confession, we did this interview back in May, and now it's November, and I don't know why, I just never got around to publishing it. It's a really good interview with Chad and Laura Boma, and I hope you enjoy the conversation we had with them.
I dressed up for this interview.
Well, we're sitting down with Chad, who's wearing a whole tuxedo. On this fine Tuesday, Laura, who is not wearing a tuxedo, and we're interviewing them today about their other 6 days. Welcome on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Is the studio everything you imagined it would be?
I mean, there's less snacks, and I sent a rider
there
ahead.
There's a whole box of Sun Chips that you refused.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I had to get my own water, so that was disappointing.
Sorry about that. Helen is in Greece right now, and she usually takes care of the riders.
I did send my rider to her. Okay.
Exactly.
I'll get it after.
Just edit that out.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Chalk it up to the reasons we need another youth intern.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, it's got, we're glad to have you guys on the podcast, and this is just an opportunity. The whole idea of this is to just get normal people talking about normal life so that everyone else in the church community can look around and say, oh yeah, these are just normal people around me. Because sometimes we have a tendency to just either assume that everyone's life is perfect around us or just not have a clue what the lives
right.
of people around us are. And so that's what we're doing, is we're just talking about life. So we do have some specific questions that we're going to ask you, but more than that, we just want to know, what is life like for Chad and for Laura?
Mm. All right.
And if you're not normal, we do want to hear that too. Like, if you're weird.
I was going
to
say
we do our best to suppress that.
That would also help people feel comfortable.
I keep that.
Yes, you're right.
Right. Well, I am a special education teacher in the Catholic Board. So I do that, obviously, from Monday to Friday. And you?
I am a mental health therapist part-time, and then I also work for Laurier's BSW program, which is a social work program as well down in Brantford part-time. And then at nighttime, I'm Batman.
Well, that's really exciting.
You're not supposed to tell people that.
Whoops.
Explains the tuxedo.
Yes, yeah. Coming from
the whole point. So.
So go back a little bit. How do you get into these careers? Did you always know you want to teach? Did you always know you wanted to be in this profession? Like, talk about the genesis of that and the maybe long and winding road.
My story is definitely more winding and long than yours is.
Mine's more direct. I played teacher the moment that I had a rocking chair in my room and forced my dog to sit in front of me, and I played teacher every day after school. But the whole special education route, grew up with parents that are both psychologists and always exposed to people who had differences, whatever that meant. And so when I was 17, I started working for KW Extended Family, doing respite work. A lot of experience there with individuals with autism and the programs that are, you know, available in the community and whatnot. And so when I went to teacher's college, I didn't really know, actually, funny enough, if I wanted to be a counselor or a teacher, and I always went back and forth. So I did the psychology major, which isn't really a teachable, but just to kind of see what I would like to do. So it's kind of funny. I kind of did all the prep work without knowing I was doing the prep work, and then did teacher's college, and then got an LTO, which is just covering someone's mat leave in special ed, and thought I'll just try it because there's no commitment here, and then loved it. And then when my number was up for permanent jobs, because I was hired at a terrible time for teachers, so it took like 6 years to get permanent. But when I finally did, it was a spec ed job, was one of my first interviews. So got it and do that now. So I kind of almost tried to almost avoid that destiny because I thought, well, my whole family does this kind of work and all this stuff. And then, you know, it just happened, and I think it's right for us right now, and I really love it. So challenging. Some days are long, but there's not as much work at night, which is great for my having young children.
So what age of kids are you working with in the school system then?
So I work for a school that's kindergarten to grade 8. And in my school, in the Catholic Board, we don't have any congregated classrooms. So when I say special ed teacher, I don't mean I have a class of students. All our students with needs are in regular classrooms, and they have either EA support or as much as possible, or they're taken out for different things throughout the day. So my role is kind of facilitating that, the EA schedules, making sure students have the right programming in place, that kind of thing. And then I have small groups for reading and writing and math, and then social skills as well. And then I get called to a lot of behavior stuff too. So when things are escalating, then I can go and try my best to enter that and try to de-escalate it or remove or whatever has to happen in that moment. So most of the work I do is in with the primary students, I would say kind of before grade four. That's where I spend most of my day, which is funny because that was not my age I would have chose. I was always a junior intermediate teacher, but the school I work for has done really great work at kind of front loading those skills and working really hard with the younger students so that they don't need that kind of intervention as they grow up. And I think it's really evident. We're not being called to grade 6, 7, 8 classes for that kind of behavior intervention, which I think is telling for when you put that work in at the beginning.
Exactly. That must be so satisfying. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this year we were really lucky. We were piloted for a social skills group. It's out of the States. It's called Teach Town, but it was a social skills program. So we have like this crew. It's so funny. After last recess, this crew of, they're all boys, not on purpose, but they just are. And they come down and we have our snack together and we just talk. And that's kind of funny. Like even conversation skills have taken some time to develop, you know, not talking over each other and getting angry or whatever. And then we do a social skill lesson basically. And then they have some free play to like try it out, kind of like whatever skill we're working on. So now they're like this little crew and we see them playing outside together, kids that have never played with anyone before. And it's just, it's really cool. So really lucky that we could pilot that, that the child and youth care worker and I did it. So yeah, it's a nice way to end the day every day because some of those boys have had quite tough days up to that point, but it's never earned or not, you know, they can always come. And then, yeah, so it's good stuff. There's some good stuff going on.
So like, it sounds like certainly challenging. I think you might've used the word exhausting or like,
yeah,
but brings you energy at the same time. Like,
yeah, the exhausting part is funny enough, not usually the students, right? Like it's the exhausting part is often just that you wish you could do more. There's certain boundaries that I can't cross. I'm not, as Chad is, a mental health therapist. I'm not. So sometimes if a student comes with bigger issues in terms of mental health, there's a certain place I can walk them to. And then I have to, you know, call in people that have that training or let it go to parents or whatever. Or when behavior, when you know behavior is not going to change until maybe a root of the problem is maybe addressed, which might be, you know, early trauma, or it might be something like that, that, you know, I can't change and I can't fix. But, so the exhausting part comes from sometimes that kind of thing, or there's never enough time in the day. There's never enough EA support. There's never enough, you know what I mean? Those kind of things are exhausting. Or if a teacher feels they wish they could have more and I just can't, and that kind of thing. 'Cause I mean, that's always going to happen in the school system. There's never, you know, inclusion works beautiful, and having students with needs in regular classrooms is a beautiful thing as long as there's enough support and everybody is safe and everybody is still learning. And so that can be the exhausting piece, mm-hmm. if sometimes you don't feel like that's happening, if you feel like there's too many interruptions or there's unsafe situations and you're not really sure what to do next. So that's the exhausting part. Sometimes when I come home, I'm like, oh, like, was it successful today or not, kind of thing. It's not the kids are exhausting. I seem to have this, I think a lot of teachers have this patience that they have, just seems never ending for students. Then sometimes at home I think, why don't I have that for my own kids? But I don't know, it just happens, just parenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll get to the kids in a little bit. Yeah. Now, before we shift gears, I'm going to actually put Chad on the spot, and we're going to play decipher teacher lingo.
Okay. I'm very good.
So I'm going to ask you to decipher three things that probably some of our listeners may not know what they are. What is EA?
An EA is an educational assistant.
Nice. Correct. Ding, 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 ding.
Good job, Chad.
Somebody's been listening in the evenings.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is Spec Ed?
Spec Ed is short form for special education.
Nice. Ding, 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 ding.
Another prize for Chad. And final question, what is LTO?
A long-term occasional.
Whoa, oh. I didn't think you'd get that. Nice.
That was like the bonus round right there.
Yeah.
Sorry, they stand out to me because teachers are one of those like groups of people that have so many short forms. There are other professions as well.
It's called EduSpeak.
Oh, there's actually a word for those words.
And all the teachings, the students that are in the education programs, Laura was roommates with about a million of them when I first met her. And they would all kind of have the same lingo. So I had very quickly had to learn what they were talking about.
Right.
Else I would.
That's great.
I just had to go sit in a corner somewhere. So.
It's similar we're glad to that when, you learned
it. I didn't have to remain in the corner.
Yes.
When Chad gets together with his mom, who's also a social worker, and you guys have a social work talk that sometimes the rest of us are like, all right, and we're out. We don't know what they're talking about.
I've heard that one too. Yeah. I sat on this thing with the Waterloo Community Hub, and it was like me, pastor, and then a bunch of other people in the social work field, mm-hmm. and they would talk about all these things, and I had no clue what they were talking about. So many short forms and acronyms and all the rest of it.
So, Chad, why don't you tell us about what you do, just normally, and then we'll see if there's any words we need
to try to get me.
So what does your week look like the other 6 days?
Well, so to kind of speak to the original question of the...
how did you get here?
How did I get here? I actually started in university for my education degree. So I originally wanted to become an elementary school teacher. My father was an elementary school teacher, and I just thought, well, hey, I made it to university, which was a miracle in itself. let's just do something.
Was it a miracle?
It actually was, yeah. I didn't try very hard in high school. And
Did you pass French in grade 12?
No, I did pass French because I was in choir.
Right.
The same teacher, which worked. We made a little bit of a deal.
We need his voice.
You like this voice?
Yeah.
You like this
voice? Actually, that quite literally almost happened.
But we won't mention that teacher's name.
And also, the French teacher, and I'm sorry for saying this on the record, but they didn't change their quizzes or tests for the previous years. And unfortunately, at that point, I was not the most honest person. Yeah, you might want to mute this at this point or edit it. So my brother did have the quizzes and tests from the years before. And
that's a teacher fail. That's
hey,
not
you
a
want
student.
A real Chad? This is the real Chad.
That's resourceful.
There's all those categories you get marked on that aren't grades, right?
Like, right. Learning skills.
And honesty is one that you might have failed, but resourcefulness, you would have gotten
with. Right. Yeah, excellent.
Isn't no, but you know what? Like, so that still happens. That happened in my house recently. So Sophia, her cousin Noah, was tutoring her in math, and he brought like the last term's test in, and here it is. Here's a sample test. Mm-hmm. Go through it, whatever. And then she goes to her class, and it's the same test. She's like, I just did every single one of these these questions.
Nailed it.
It's incredible.
Now, the difference between that is that she's probably still learned how to get to the answer, where I just went A, C, B, D, and memorized it. So
doesn't the story go that your mom was like holding her breath till they called your name at graduation just to make sure?
The first thing we did actually when we stepped into the gymnasium of my graduation was we grabbed the bulletin and made sure I had both the Christian school diploma and the Ontario secondary school diploma. And I had both, and we both all did a silent kind of fist pump and went, yes. And my principal definitely did wink at me when he shook my hand and gave me his diploma. So
look at you now. Yeah, look at you now.
It's kind of funny how that works. So
you were going to go in the education route and...
Yeah, and so then I switched because it seemed like too much work at the time. And then I switched into psychology, which is pretty close to what I'm doing now. But again, I still wasn't ready for education at that time, slash the challenges of having to pay for Christian private education in Midwest America. Northwest Iowa is where I went. And then, so I had to move back home because of finances and some poor decision-making skills. And and I actually had to work for about 4 or 5 years in trades. So I did a whole bunch of different kind of jobs, like landscaping and renovations. I worked for a cabinetry tree place, so I know how to install kitchens. And then it's when I went back to school part-time at Redeemer Ancaster is where I met Laura. And upon meeting her family, and her older brother was doing his social work degree, and he kind of like really encouraged me to kind of just go for it. And so then at that point, I switched up to Renison at UW here, and... yeah, the rest is history. Mm-hmm. And then I went into social work because I didn't want it originally because my mom is a social worker, as Laura said, but she's a child welfare worker, which is not accurate representation of social work. It's its own kind of offset. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to get into it because I didn't want to go to child welfare, but that's exactly where I ended up right after I finished my BSW. But for most people that I don't know, that definitely ended my career after about a year, and that's when I went back and did my master's full-time then so that I could have more options, and that's why I'm now doing therapy. It's pretty cool.
See, my family will suck you in. Come by and you're gonna be in like psychology, social work. Yeah. Suck in.
It's pretty crazy.
That is kind of a wild route, but you're loving what you're doing now.
I am so thankful right now. Like, sometimes people send me job postings, or once in a while I'll look and stuff like that. But then I also kind of just have the thought of, I'm really lucky to have a job where I can have flexible hours. I mean, I do work 2 evenings a week, which definitely gets in the way mm-hmm. of meetings, pastoral care meetings, and others, some of those things. But it allows me to have Fridays off with Rosie right now, which I absolutely love. And mm-hmm. there's 3 days a week where I am, well, I drop off Bennett every day at school, but I'm also picking him up. Mm-hmm. And to be able to just be able to do that and mm-hmm. not get home at 5:30 and then, like, you're already exhausted at that point and you got to rush mm-hmm. to make supper. And then by that, you know, it's already 7:30 and then you're putting them to bed. The work-life balance for me right now, mm-hmm. I'm really thankful for it. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice at this juncture. And I'm lucky because Laura, as she already mentioned, is permanent. Mm-hmm. So there's not as much pressure on me for, thankfully, for benefits and mm-hmm. Pensions and stuff like that. So it allows me to, at this stage of life, I can see it changing. I can see it definitely changing when the kids get older, but right now it's really nice. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, those Fridays are a gift.
Mm-hmm. They are.
You don't get those mm-hmm. back.
That's and great. And it allows us to then maybe do more things on the weekend, because then I can do a little bit more cleaning on Friday so that Laura doesn't need to do that on the weekend. Right. Or I can say to her, you know what, I don't start work till 12 on Monday. I work till 8:30 on Monday night, but I can clean the house Monday morning.
You're a good man.
To free up that time when you're together on the weekend.
Right, because you end up like every Saturday morning, right? It's like, okay, we got to clean first and then we'll get, you know, whatever, going with the week. So it's nice to definitely leave the honey-do list.
And she's so busy. And, like, the last thing, you know, it's not that she doesn't do anything. She does lots around the house. But it would be nice to not have to have her feel like she's got to do a million things when I have the ability and the time to do it myself.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of little names in there. You didn't use any kind of speak or whatever, but you did mention a couple of names, Rosie and Bennett. Why don't you tell us about these little two munchkins?
And if they're being raised by a special ed teacher and a mental health therapist, they're perfect, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah. Actually, I had a bit of a crisis last year when Bennett was having, because as any kid, went through a little stage of whatever, and I was like, I do this every day at work. Like, how come I can't teach him how to, like, calm himself down? And Chad was like, he's 4. Maybe that's why. Anyways, yes, Bennett is 5 in JK, and Rosie is 2.5. Mm-hmm. And she goes to Katrina Oki. Shout out to Katrina.
What?
During the week, which is awesome. So yeah, they're our little ones.
So as far as personality wise, Bennett is a lot more kind of reserved, and he's contemplative. He really likes to create and design. He's very industrious. He's definitely social, but he can also very much be okay on his own, which is really much like his father. The other one, we don't know where she came from, really. Her sense of humor at 2.5 is, like, already shocking.
How she's ridiculous.
This little kid can just make you laugh. And she's not even really trying. She knows she's trying to be funny.
Yeah.
But she's just so, mm-hmm. like, up for the party no matter what, you know. Doesn't want to miss out on stuff. Mm-hmm. She's tagging around her brother. Like, if there's the best representation of Rosie is when I pick up Bennett from school, there's a group of other kids in his class that walk down the sidewalk, the same area of ours, to our house. And they all kind of group together and they're talking to each other and laugh and stuff like that. And if I have Rosie with me, she just kind of walks in the middle of them and just looks at all of them and just kind of smiles at all of them. Yeah. Doesn't really say anything, but if they make a joke or laugh, she goes, or she'll, like, kind of like,
I like wish they could fake see laugh. Just yeah, like.
It's more the visual demonstration. Yeah. Really
the best anecdote for the two different personalities is when we went to Great Wolf Lodge, because Rosie was like 1 and a bit, not very old. Bennett, I don't know, 3 and 3.5 or so. And there's the wave pool, right? So this wave pool, Bennett, like, puts his toe in. Spends most of the time just fluttering around the edge, like playing with the little spouts of water that come out of the wall. Rosie, straight in. Like, just without a beat, just as soon as the life jacket zipped up, she's straight in that thing. Like, the amount of time she almost drowned.
Yeah, I constantly pick her up at that wave pool.
And
I was
like, who are these kids? Like, Bennett barely wet at the end. Rosie's covered, you know, two and a half years younger, but anyways.
Yeah, that's a perfect example.
Example of the two personalities. And I don't know where she doesn't get the fear thing, because Chad and I are both quite
cautious,
nervous about, you know, heights, dangers, these kind of things. Not her.
Humans are meant to be on the ground.
So yes.
How's their dynamic with each other? With those personalities?
We're really lucky. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they get along well. Bennett is very patient with her, which is lovely because he needs to be. But
she is so in love with him too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like she will not bat an eye if he comes up to her and sits beside her to watch TV, and she'll snuggle right into him. And
yeah,
it's cute. It's really cute.
So right now we should knock on all pieces of wood. They get along well. I mean, they're siblings. They whatever, but yeah, yeah, good kids.
That's awesome.
Cool. Mm-hmm. As you guys met at Redeemer.
We did. We did meet at Redeemer, and it's a bit of a story.
Will you share it with us?
Yes, I will.
Go for it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was in my fourth year. So I don't know if you've heard at Redeemer or most Christian universities that the MRS degree is like getting married, right? Your Mrs. degree. And right. And I was rather determined to not get this MRS degree because, I mean, Redeemer, by fourth year, you pretty much know everyone, whatever. And I just thought, okay, I'm not going to meet someone here. That's fine.
And you're also not Dutch, so the chances were low.
Not Dutch, not CRC.
You look Dutch.
I wasn't in the, you know, yeah. Anyway, so I was in class one day, and I guess turns out we didn't know, but we were. I had had a class in a classroom, and Chad had a class after in the same classroom. But we had never crossed paths because there's 20 minutes or so between. But the one day I stayed late because my friend Lindsay and I had a teacher, and he was...
You had a crush on him, just say it out loud.
He was a great teacher. He was a really great teacher, and he was really funny, and he was really great.
He's a bit of a dream.
He was like 55, I think, when we... Like, he was older, but he was just such a funny guy. And so we were staying late, we were telling him this joke, and we told him this joke, and it was a dumb joke, and I was embarrassed already having to tell him, but Lindsay made me. And then he was laughing, and Chad walked in, this person who I've never seen before... Handsome man in his leather jacket walks in and he goes, "What are you guys laughing about?" And then Dr. Kozik goes, "Laura, tell him your joke." And I turned around and looked at him and probably red face all over. I was like, "It's okay. I don't want to tell him the joke." And you were like, "Come on, just tell me your joke." And then I told you my stupid joke, to which you said, "That's a really bad joke." And I was like, "I know." And then I left and my friend Lindsay said, "That was really embarrassing for you." And I said, "I hope I never see that person again." And it was so embarrassing.
Do you remember the joke? Awesome.
Yes. It was, I've always wondered why Frisbee got bigger as it comes towards you. And then it hit me. Get that's it? Good. That's good. It's not funny.
Is
it's
that
not
the moment
funny.
You knew this was
that's
your future
the,
wife
that's
to
the
be.
Minute that I knew there was something about her that was intriguing for someone. Have that poor jokes
right.
locked and loaded at a given's notice, right? Like that's there's something special about that.
And then it continues in more embarrassment for me because then the next week, like a couple days later, I saw you in the hall and he said, "Any more dumb jokes for me?" And I said, "I told you one." I think it was the orange and the doctor joke or whatever. Anyways, and then we talked about How I Met Your Mother. We were both watching that at the time, right. And I was like, "Oh, everyone's coming to my house tonight. You can come over." So he knew where I lived because his friend used to live there.
There's
so,
two versions to this story.
So I said, "Come on over. Everyone's coming over at 7 or whatever." Then I get home and I find out that so-and-so has a basketball game. So-and-so has a big exam. They're not going to be here. So-and-so's car broke down on the right. other side of the city. So another person. So I am home alone, no party, no friends coming over. And I have invited this man who I don't have a number for and can't tell. Okay, maybe don't come. No one's coming. Over to my home. So I'm waiting there panicking that he's going to show up and think that I've like orchestrated this solo hangout when I didn't anticipate. So then he comes through and he was like, "Oh, sure. You didn't want any, or sure, there was going to be a party here."
It's like that moment. I don't know if anybody of our viewers or listeners, I guess not viewers, unless you're looking at your computer screen still, have watched the Friends episode where they try to figure out if Ross came on to Rachel or Rachel came on to Ross first.
Right.
It's exactly like that. This story, I think, kind of proves that.
Right.
I did not make the first move.
Right. Sure. Sure.
I remember this stage of your life because, Laura, you were attending Elevation, and right. then you would disappear for months right. at a time, and then you would show up again, and it was like, "Oh, yay, Laura's back."
Right.
And then you showed up, I remember, at the rec complex the morning where you brought this guy, Chad. And honestly, one of the first thoughts in my mind was, "Oh my gosh, we better not lose this girl." And then I got to know Chad, and he's a nice guy and such. Right. But I was just like, "This guy better not take her away."
Right.
And he didn't.
He didn't.
We roped him in.
Yeah. So yes, I didn't mean to have a solo date with you the day after I met you, or a couple days after I met you. But
rest is
history. You know,
the rest is
my roommates came home. You were playing the piano. which was a hit for them. Right. And you left and they said, who is that guy? And I said, that's the guy that I met a couple days ago. Because I told them. And they were like, whoa, I thought you guys were long friends. Like, you didn't seem like you just met a couple days ago. So that was kind of a nice clue of like, okay.
It was pretty natural pretty quickly. And it was just easy. It was an easy relationship to start and maintain. Didn't take too much at the beginning.
Well, I made you wait for like 6 months to actually start dating, but that's okay. You don't remember. See? It just blink of an eye. You don't even remember. There you go.
It's all good.
Awesome. Alrighty, guys, we're going to shift gears here. We're going to invite you to dip into the mug of mystery.
Oh, boy.
There are questions in here that we have not prompted you on, and you're going to answer whatever it is that you pull out of here.
Oh, boy. We'll get you to both answer the same question.
Ooh. Okay. Ooh. What's the best, worst gift you've ever given or received? I know exactly what you're going to say, I think.
Let me think about it for a second because this is kind of a trick question too, right? Because if I answer this incorrectly or correctly,
you can tell us the best gift. Can I probably rather hear the worst?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm figuring.
In our whole lives,
or from each other,
whatever you want. I'll go first.
So the best gift that I ever received.
You can't say Laura's love. Like, that's just the one.
I'm not that sappy.
He's
sappy.
Like, it's also not true.
I'm a real... this is real person talk, right? That's definitely not true. I was in grade 7, and that was in 1996. 1997. And the Colorado Avalanche had just won the Stanley Cup. So my mom and dad, they won the Stanley Cup in the end of May or whatever, and my birthday's in a couple of weeks in June. Actually, it's on Father's Day this year, and they got me a Colorado Avalanche jersey for my birthday. And I'm pretty sure that all the pitchers from grade 7 and 8 have me wearing this jersey.
That's amazing.
I did not take that thing off. It was so awesome.
Do you still have it?
100%. Laura's wearing it in her engagement picture.
Yeah, that's love.
That is intense.
That's true. And I got another one for myself, and then I got Bennett and Rosie, two little jerseys. So thanks to Angie Melchin for sending those back. Angie Melch, what's up?
Okay, I have a worse gift. So it's more of a situation, but one Christmas morning, I'd asked for a puppy for months. Oh, 32. I was probably like 18. Oh, okay. So I was old enough, but like, yeah. So we had had a puppy till I was about 14 that I loved, as you heard in the school story. She played school with me every day. And so years had passed and I had said I'd really love a puppy again, had asked for it all year. And then Christmas morning rolls around. My mom's handing out presents. Brian's getting presents. Mike's getting presents. Mom, Dad, whatever. I'm getting nothing. I got a stocking with some shampoo, conditioner, some treats. I'm like, okay, this is looking good for the puppy thing. Sure, sure. So they're handing it out. No one's noticing that I'm always have to be the elf, youngest child, so I'm handing them out. But no one's noticing I'm not getting anything, so I'm like, okay, this is awesome. I'm totally getting this puppy. It ends. We're all sitting there. My dad goes, Laura, did you only get your stocking? I was like, yeah. So sure. So sure. My brother even went, ruff, ruff, ruff. And I was like, oh, it's happening, it's happening. And my mom goes, we forgot a bag of presents upstairs. They go upstairs, they get this bag of presents, they come down, and it's just like regular stuff, like a t-shirt. They just forgot the bag upstairs, which is fine. Oh, and I tried He's the worst. He's absolutely the worst. But I tried so hard to be like, thanks, guys. Thanks, Mom. But like, holding back tears because I was so sure I was getting the puppy.
The whole morning set up for the puppy.
Oh, anyways. But
how long was it afterwards until you got Sky, though?
He'd already passed away. That's okay, no problem. Well, whatever. It was probably a good 20 minutes after the present opening that anyone kind of noticed I didn't get anything. Because, like, what do you do in that situation? Like, why did I only get the stocking? Like, you know, who says that? So I was just sitting there being like, it's happening. Like,
there's a reason for the delay. Yeah.
To build it up in my head that this was going to be the moment. I was preparing myself, my speech, my acceptance speech, and then... Anyway, so
poor girl.
I made it through, and I think my parents, we think of it fondly now, but at the time it was a hard day for me. So
they don't forget presents for everybody now. That's for sure.
Yes. Probably they only do that once.
They definitely check that.
Yeah. Anyways.
So You guys have been part of Elevation for a while, since university.
Yeah.
Brought Chad along, and we have a bunch of key values.
Right.
And we ask everyone who comes on the podcast, which key value has been resonating with them the most lately? So we'd love to hear from you guys out of Elevation's key values, which ones
Want to say it together and we'll count?
No, it's okay. You go first.
So for me, the key value that resonates the most is the journey mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And not because the rest of them aren't good enough. It's because for me, my pathway through faith, I already mentioned, I went to Christian school growing up, and that was elementary, high school, university.
Mm-hmm.
So Christianity has always just been there for me, and it never really took much thought, and I'd feel so uncomfortable when I'd have these, you know, even like Phoenix Fest this weekend. I remember as a teen going to the youth kind of conventions and stuff and feeling so out of place there, because it's like, I'm just a Christian, like, period, done. Like,
mm-hmm.
doesn't need to be more than that,
mm-hmm.
Isn't it? And then you kind of already kind of get this sense that if you're born into it and your family does it, that you're kind of just already there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that it's that I thought I was better than everybody else, but there was kind of that thought of, like, I should only associate with other Christian Reformed people. Like, where you're in a random town, you go find the CRC church on Sunday morning, right? And you go show up there for Sunday morning. You're like, oh, my dad's Randy Bauma. Oh, I know Randy. And it's like, you're like in Sudbury or something like that, right? It's
like, Dutch bingo.
Right? They all play. So for me, the journey mentality of being here is quite, it reflects my, the peaks and valleys of my faith walk. Mm. Rather than feeling like I need to be at this certain level at all points, especially to be part of a church,
mm-hmm.
It allows me to kind of feel being challenged or even becoming somewhat complacent. And I'll be honest with that. There's complacency that happens once in a while. You're not out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean by that? And mm-hmm. so all these kinds of different steps that have kind of gone through our lives, and for me, my own spirituality, my own faith walk, especially now how it resonates with my work too, mm-hmm. That journey mentality has really allowed me to feel like Elevation has been a place where I can be challenged, I can challenge others, I can, you know, have the other six days where maybe I haven't thought about God at all, really, maybe even. It's just been so busy. And then I can still show up on Sunday and feel like, that sucked. Mm-hmm. I feel guilty about it. But at the same time, God's just happy I'm here right now, mm-hmm. right? And that I'm trying to connect in whatever ways I'm trying to connect. And to know that there's another community of people that are like-minded, and there's no kind of, there's a shared responsibility, obviously, for faith, which is another core value, but there's no kind of expectations to be somebody,
mm-hmm.
Is pretty nice.
So kind of like the call to worship, how it's like, yeah, maybe you're here for exactly. Spiritual curiosity, maybe you're here for a longing, you know, like the community aspect, like some weeks, and I think it's just the human condition, some weeks you're there for your community, right? And maybe you and God are going through something, but you're there for your community that week. And then the next week you're there because you and God are in a great place and you're excited about it. But the fact that at Elevation, it's so comfortable, like you said, to come no matter where you're at is a unique thing. And I think that we forget how unique it is until, you know, you get into conversations with people going to other places and you realize that the lack of judgment, and I mean, we're human, there's going to be judgment, but the fact that I don't feel any sort of judgment for wherever I'm at, and I feel like there's so many people here that I can say where I'm at, mm-hmm. with, is like, pretty incredible. And I think that for me, the core value, the life together piece, is so important to me. And that's my personality. I love, you know, talking with people through what they're going through, but also sharing about me. I'm, you know, kind of an open book with a lot of stuff. And for me, like the different small groups I've been part of or things like that, just sharing with each other. And I think the one small group I'm in, we're reading a Rachel Held Evans book, which is kind of timely, but we talk often about how important it is to come together as like young moms and just say like, some days I don't feel like I have anything right. And then other days say like, I did this great thing this week, or with parenting or with our faith or whatever it is, and that we can have a safe place to do that has so much growth. And a couple weeks, I think it was 2 weeks ago, with your sermon, we were sitting around the discussion table, and someone said something like, a homogenous group of people has a really hard time growing because you don't know what you necessarily think about something until you hear all the other sides of it and you're challenged by the other sides of it. And I think that's why, kind of to put both things together, why it's so important to do life together, but then also to do life with people that aren't at the same spot as you all the time, right? Like to have conversations with and have a comfortable situation at this church where I can talk to a pastor about something the same way that I can talk to a friend about something and not feel like you, Brandon, or Graham, you guys are going to judge that I think this. You know, I think a lot of people out there might feel like they can't be that honest with their leaders because they need to, you know, whatever. And even you guys are really transparent with us a lot of times and vulnerable with us as
right. Well, especially as a community. What we walked through, too, as a church community last year, too, right? I think that it's forced vulnerability, whether or not we were ready for it.
Yeah.
And for Laura and I, who are both kind of, you know, we're scared of vulnerability, but we still embrace it. It was kind of the ability for us to kind of say, okay, we can be vulnerable about kind of what is going on with us or going on with, mm-hmm. you know, in our small groups, we're vulnerable with each other and mm-hmm. in her small groups with the other ladies as well. Mm-hmm. And there's just something, so tangible about that, mm-hmm. right? And it's so much outside of just the Sunday morning thing. Mm-hmm. For Laura, for me, it's definitely being about inside of worship and being on as many communities as I can mm-hmm. fit in the week and stuff like that. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can't go a podcast without shouting out to Brené Brown because I am her biggest fan. But and any of our listeners that know me would be shocked if I didn't. But she was in. Do you know who Brené Brown is? Yeah. Okay.
He rolled his eyes.
She was.
Oh, I know who she is.
There's a positive eye roll.
Positive eye roll. No, but she was doing a podcast with Dax Shepherd, and he said to her, like, you know, because she studies shame or whatever. How do you call yourself Christian and you should study shame? Because, like, in his opinion, I don't think he has a faith background, you know, church is the root of all shame or whatever. He said something like that. And she said, you know, I love God, but sometimes I really hate church or whatever, right? And she went on to talk about that. But I thought when I listened to it, I was really actually encouraged. I thought, like, man, like, I'm so proud to be part of the church that we're part of where I just don't feel like that is a thing. And it might be, and I might not know it is, but I certainly don't feel, and we've as a couple have just felt like we can come as we are no matter where we're at, and that we're loved and supported, and that even our leaders are talking to us about times that they feel different things. And I think that is really special. I think that vulnerability, as she would say, is the route to kind of avoiding some of that shame and stuff that comes alongside with kind of major religion sometimes, right? So yeah, I think we're really thankful to have landed here, and we're really happy to invite people to come and stuff, because I think they could feel a sense of belonging and stuff. So we're doing our best to recruit, you know.
Fantastic.
Got some major contributors lately. But
well, it's really encouraging to hear. I mean, just listening to you guys share that, it's like, all right, I guess we'll show up to work and do this again another day, won't we?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. You can find out more about our church at elevationwaterloo.org, and we'll talk to you next time. See you later.